Good morning. This is Dr. Matthew Dunn, host of The Future of Email. My guest today, Reinhard Schutels. Did I pronounce that correctly, Reinhard?
Yeah, absolutely.
First guest from Latvia. And Reinhard runs ChatSmart International and helps customers market effectively on WhatsApp. Fair summary?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fill people in on the short version of your agency first. Tell me who you work with and what you do for them.
Yeah, so I can give a little introduction of how it all started and how we came to WhatsApp marketing essentially. So we started with my partner in 2020, 4 years ago, exactly. Mm-hmm. And originally we didn't start it as a WhatsApp marketing agency because that's something absolutely rare nowadays. We started as a normal agency focusing on media buying, which was mostly Google Ads, Facebook. But yeah, at that time, so we were working with e-commerce brands and we do still now. But we saw this customer acquisition crisis, what many experts say right nowadays, which is that media buying was becoming less and less effective. We were working with many clients and pretty huge clients. I'm talking about 7-8-figure brands. And we were really in trouble at that time, especially after iOS 14 came in 2021. So at that time, we were already playing with chatbots, with different tools. Many people know ManyChat at that time was popular too.
Yeah.
So we were already like trying different stuff for customer retention, including email marketing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we had one client at that time who was really struggling with high cart abandonment, and we just couldn't break even on their ads. So one late evening, we decided to try a new strategy to implement WhatsApp, since we saw that all of their clients are from Europe. It's a European brand, and we thought it could work very well. So basically what we did is we set up the WhatsApp flows for this client, which is cart abandonment, other flows as well, with personalized voice messages. So we hired a voiceover actress from UK who recorded personalized voice messages for all the people. We set up this automation on ManyChat at that time and just forgot about that. And I remember right now that after 2 weeks, when we were checking this account, the results were like absolutely crazy. So just in 2 weeks, we generated around 155,000 euros just purely from those automations for this client at that time. And that's when we thought this is the way. Like, we saw all those conversations going. We saw how people are actually engaging with WhatsApp, that it actually performs. And we saw the increase actually in average order value. And from that time, we went all in on WhatsApp marketing and started working with many brands since then.
So let's go backwards and pull your example apart a little bit, because I got to tell you, one of the working assumptions I've got for this conversation is that the probably predominantly U.S. audience for this podcast may not realize the role WhatsApp plays in people's lives in most of the EU countries. The shopping cart, abandoned cart thing that set you off down this pathway. You're saying that if I were, you know, a customer somewhere for that e-commerce brand, and I went and I started shopping, and then I'm like, changed my mind, forgot about it, or left, or something like that, that I would then get a WhatsApp message with Mary Poppins telling me I left something in the cart, basically, right?
Yeah.
Voice
exactly.
Message. And a voice message.
Voice
not
message.
A message.
Yeah, voice message on WhatsApp, which feels really personalized.
Yeah, it feels really personalized. Now, quick side jaunt, personalization. She didn't record every name in Europe. How personalized was it?
Yeah, of course, she couldn't record their name. I think nowadays it's already possible with AI.
Yeah.
But still it feels really personalized, like seducing that. The customer, but it performed really well.
Wow. Was there that, I mean, we'll get into why that would be such a startling experience here in a little bit, but was there any negative response to balance the like success of that? Did anyone say, wait a minute, you're bothering me, I didn't ask for it?
Yeah, of course, there are always some exceptions to all the flows that we do. There is relatively small unsubscribe rate, but what we noticed for the like past 3 years after working with many clients, that unsubscribe rate is actually pretty low on WhatsApp. It's a little bit higher than on email. It's around 0.6% around
that. Okay. In that same example, e-commerce brand, did the customers who got the, you know, the flow response about the abandoned cart, would they have had to have opted in for WhatsApp communication from that brand somewhere prior to the flow happening?
Yeah. So they were opting in through different pop-ups, chat widget on the website.
Yeah.
But card abandonment flow, it's triggered. The customer should not be necessarily opted in beforehand.
Okay.
So once they entered their phone number in checkout, they just add the tick that box.
Mm-hmm.
That they are okay with receiving promotional messages, and we'll discuss that later about the GDPR and all of those problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in 2 hours, the flow was triggered.
So, wow. Okay. That's, here's the background to some of my reaction. And you probably know this stuff, but it's just to some extent, repeating this for the audience's benefit, for some interesting and fun historical reasons, US Canadian market, very text centric SMS. And because of the schism in the market between Apple and Android on mobile, which I know is, you know, schism in other markets, that plus texting as a sort of central habit in the US Canadian markets, people aren't used to rich interactive messages coming in a chat channel. We use pretty dumb messaging here, at least for the moment, right? Most of the texts I get are actually ASCII text. And if they're going to be any richer than that, they're going to tend to be from friends who are using the same platform I use, in my case, iPhone and iMessage. Not how things work in your neck of the woods, right?
Right. But what about the Facebook Messenger? In the US, it's quite popular.
Yes and no. That's a generational behavior here. I'm older than you are, obviously. And I'm not a big Facebook fan. Have never run Facebook Messenger in my life. Will probably never run Facebook Messenger in my life. But my sons, who are ballpark your age, both said, "Oh yeah," because I use them to keep up with the world. Right? I'm like, okay, Facebook Messenger. Yeah, for some stuff, right? The band will communicate via Facebook Messenger, and then I've got friend group that does that, and then I've got other friends where it's a long-running Apple Messages chat or text chat or something like that. In your markets, with your relationships, do most things tend to happen on WhatsApp?
Yeah, absolutely. In Europe, WhatsApp is the most popular channel. It depends, of course, in the region. Germany, DACH region is the strongest, the highest penetration of WhatsApp.
Okay.
But yeah, I would say all the Europe is using WhatsApp. Yeah.
All of you. And you said something about in your description of opt-in that's actually surprisingly important here. Providing a phone number gives me the identity link to WhatsApp, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Big deal, right? Because US market, Facebook Messengers, you mentioned, someone would actually have to know my Facebook ID or probably be friends on Facebook. Like I said, I've never used it. But as opposed to that, I've already got his phone number, her phone number. That's all I need to connect on that channel. Surprisingly big difference.
Yeah, the difference is absolutely enormous. And we also tried Facebook Messenger when we were just starting. It was really complicated. So the person have to sign into Facebook, then they should open the messenger, then they should confirm like click multiple buttons, that was really inconvenient.
Yeah. And inconvenience just doesn't cut it for marketing, for notifications, for things like what you're doing. So fair description, the sort of ubiquity of WhatsApp as a platform and as a habit is the landscape that you're really helping customers use to communicate, connect, market, and so on, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. That's fast. It's fun to hear the differences. And one of the reasons I'm particularly intrigued by this, in the US Canadian market, at least, I'm kind of sitting watching to see just what Apple does with their relatively recently announced pending support for RCS, Rich Communication System, which is the theoretical successor to texting. If Apple really, really embraces what RCS could do, what we may see in the US market, US Canadian market, is the text habit becoming a rich messaging habit with things that are much more like the kind of rich experience that you're providing for your customers. That'll change the game a bunch if it happens.
Yeah, definitely. However, I recently was reading an absolutely different perspective that, I'm not doubting that Apple will add this feature, but that WhatsApp is growing at quite a massive speed in the US. And
Interesting. I would be entirely surprised, but I mean, you know, sidebar again for audience benefit, Facebook also owns WhatsApp in addition to Facebook Messenger. So it's a little hard to escape the octopus's grasp in that sense. And I'm sure Facebook is watching penetration and habit numbers very carefully, because they want, as a company, they'd want you on one of their platforms, if not more than one, right? Wow.
Yeah.
What's the most, so it's been 3 years that you've been on the WhatsApp journey?
Yeah, 3 to 4 years. Yeah.
3 to 4 years. So. Yeah. What's the most recent, most interesting thing that you've done for a customer?
Well, I could go into the Black Friday strategy that we did in 2023. And on Black Friday, we were doing WhatsApp marketing for a pretty huge brand from UK and from the musical industry. And the goal was to avoid the standardized, just big sale discounts that everybody's doing, and create a community. So within just a couple of weeks, we pretty quickly collected a WhatsApp subscriber base of 30,000 subscribers on WhatsApp. So that's, if we think about that, that's a pretty solid amount. So when you collect 30,000 subscribers on WhatsApp, that's actually a very profitable thing. Wow. Like for email marketing, that's considered a pretty small audience.
Yeah.
30,000 subscribers, most of them may be inactive, but for WhatsApp, that's a big deal. So we engaged them with a giveaway. So the whole premise of that was giveaway, and people were subscribing to WhatsApp. They should confirm their interest in giveaway by subscribing to the brand's WhatsApp. And then we were teasing this audience with that giveaway is coming soon, that the deadline for giveaway is closing, et cetera, et cetera. And then we, once we passed this warm-up phase, mm-hmm. we went straight to the selling, which we announced the winners. And then we started giving the gift cards to everyone else for participation as a thank you gifts. That was a very solid strategy. So that generated a lot of sales, because once the person receives the gift card, they are kind of like obligated to activate that until it's Christmas or until the new year.
Yeah.
So that brought a lot of sales as well.
Interesting. That the word you used, community, like intriguing. Would it be fair to say that the level of attention people pay to that particular channel, WhatsApp, helps make that connection stronger, more emotional, more lively, more engaged, where email wouldn't necessarily do the same thing?
Yeah, WhatsApp in Europe kind of feels like community. And especially when you see the brand, when you see this is an official account of brand, you see this verified green check mark in WhatsApp, okay, which is right now also a big thing for a lot of brands. That feels engaging. And that feels kind of like you are being treated as a VIP customer.
Okay. Interesting. And because it'd be hard to pull off, it would be hard to generate that same level of engagement and ultimately relationship in the email channel. That's my read on it. What do you think?
I agree with that. Yeah. So I always like to say that WhatsApp is kind of like the perfect overlap between SMS and email, where email is long form. It's usually not a two-way conversation. It's not that personal in most of the cases, whereas SMS is a little bit too aggressive. It's too short form. It's hard to actually make great copywriting and tell the whole idea on SMS. Whereas WhatsApp is rich media. You can go with longer texts, and there are buttons, there are catalogs. You can directly send products right now on WhatsApp, by the way. That's a feature that WhatsApp invented just a few months ago. You can just send a link with a product directly on WhatsApp to the customer. So, yeah.
And if you send a link with a product and they say, I want to buy this widget, do they do that within WhatsApp, or does it end up ultimately on a website or an e-commerce transaction?
That could happen both. So in some regions, WhatsApp payments are already available. They are not available yet in most of the Europe. So they're available in India and Brazil, which are main markets for WhatsApp right now.
Okay.
But soon WhatsApp payments will be available. I believe so.
So in theory, that community of 30,000 you talked about, you know, next step after the gift card could be, you know, this is on sale or special just for this community. And someone could say, cool, I want it, I bought it, and never leave WhatsApp.
Sorry, what do you mean?
Is it possible that the entire chain from promotion through transaction could all take place within the WhatsApp client?
Yeah, that is possible. With WhatsApp catalogs of products, that is possible.
Yeah.
And I think I'm kind of just predicting why it's happening. So, because if we take a look at China, all the commerce is happening in WeChat.
It's WeChat, yeah.
Like all the brands that are selling in China, they know this. So WeChat is really where they order food, they do the shopping, they pay the bills. It's just everything is centralized in one messaging app.
Yes.
And I kind of feel that, just my personal feeling, that WhatsApp is going in that direction. And in recent conference, also Mark Zuckerberg said that WhatsApp is really going to be the next big thing, especially for commerce. So they're really focusing on that.
Interesting. So, yeah. The closest equivalent that I can think of in the US market is probably how people who are very habitual Amazon customers tend to use the Amazon app. I've got a close friend who said just the other day, you know, 90%+ of the things that I buy through Amazon, they just show up at the door. Like, because there's no transaction, there's no credit card. You know, the search, the catalog, obviously vast. They know his address, all that other, you know, like all of the friction points that you could take out of the way, aside from what is it you want, are taken out of the way. And he said, maybe I could lower the price by shopping. I don't even bother. That's a powerful position to have, isn't it?
Right. In Europe, Amazon is not that powerful as in the US. We don't have the same day delivery and many other things. But yeah, Amazon is also a massive superpower.
Massive superpower. And just asterisk, I gotta tell you, when you start seeing the same day delivery thing show up, strap on. It's it's a astonishing behavior changer to have the world like go like this. And my son ordered a saw blade the other day on a Saturday at 5 o'clock and was cutting a hole with it on Sunday from Amazon. What the heck, right? That's a big difference. Switch gears and think big picture for a second. Is what's your perspective about the attention and privacy trade-off of having a platform, in the case of your market, WhatsApp, be that knit into our lives? All good, partially good, times you wish you could turn it off. What do you think?
Yeah, until if the person is subscribing and they agree to receive promotions, then yeah, it's absolutely fine to do this. I think there's no problem with that. But yeah, GDPR is always a problem. All brands are concerned with that. But we have strict procedures how to stay compliant with GDPR. Mm-hmm. So first of all, the person should be informed and they should agree to receive promotions, obviously. Mm-hmm. As an email and SMS, of course. But a big thing here, the big difference between email, SMS, and WhatsApp is that WhatsApp is considered a social media platform. Mm-hmm. So that gives a little bit of advantage, because in your privacy policy, you can state that Meta is the one responsible for processing this data. So that's okay. Kind of, yeah, like a difference here.
Okay, so Meta parent company is,
yeah,
on
parent company
for the privacy compliance issues fundamentally. You're just using their, yeah, you're using their platform, but you're not a platform of your own in that scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas if you're taking subscribers on your website for your email list, then you are the responsible party. Is that right?
You are fully responsible in that
fully
case.
Responsible.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a fairly important distinction. You do this for a living, so it wouldn't be fair to ask about your habits, but think in terms of friends whose habits you know reasonably well. How many merchant commercial relationships on WhatsApp would you expect them to have? You know, we're talking 3 to 5, 10 to 20, you know, 50 to 100.
That's a great question, because it depends on the region. In Latvia, in Eastern Europe, WhatsApp commerce is not that popular yet.
Okay.
In Germany, DACH region, I guess every second, every third person is receiving promotional messages if they're doing shopping. In Germany, in DACH region, it's quite popular.
Okay.
In UK too, I would say.
In UK.
Not that
well.
Popular as in Germany, but yeah. In Eastern Europe, it's less promotional messages, less commerce in WhatsApp.
Do you expect it to grow?
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say so.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a concerted push from Meta to really sort of back WhatsApp as the next as the next big wave for their product set, that's a mighty big backer to have. Interesting. It's going to sound like dumb questions, but it's just, I would expect a lot of the US audience for this podcast not to have necessarily spent much time in WhatsApp. How interruptive is it? If I use WhatsApp a lot and I've said to Merchant X, yeah, I would love to hear what's on promotion or what's going on there. Is it going to be bing, bing, ping, ping all day long? Do I have control over that? Like, what's the experience like?
So WhatsApp as an app itself is interruptive. We send usually, and we recommend all of our clients sending not more than 3 to 4 campaigns per month on regular months. Of course, there are exceptions such as Black Friday. Product launches, some holidays.
Yeah.
But on regular months, sending more than 3 to 4 campaigns. And I'm talking not flows, just card abandonment or something like that, but specific salesy promotional campaigns.
Yeah.
That's too aggressive if you're sending more than 3 to 4 per month.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. That's more reasonable than what I see in the some of the merchant texting practices here. I subscribe to a couple of I've subscribed to a couple of merchants for sure, send me text about stuff just as a professional experiment. And when it, you know, when my phone or my Mac goes ding and it's a yet another sale, I'm like, I should just cancel this because it's annoying and I wasn't planning on buying it. And this is a segue point. They are training me to wait for the sale on a lot of those. Like there's a golf merchant who I get texts from. And basically I've gotten enough of them where I'm like, if I need balls or whatever, I'm just going to wait because they're going to put it on sale and I'll get a text about it sooner or later. And I guess it pays off for them, but it's a funny thing to incent your customer to wait for the sale instead of, you know, what, when they need or what they need. You think the same thing would happen?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but just my personal observation and feeling is that many merchants in the US are sort of like overusing SMS text messaging.
From the conversations I've had with both companies in that text messaging channel, like one of the first guests I had was from Kenneth Berg from Text Request. It's a costly channel here, very costly channel in the UK, texting specifically. People are not as willing to turn loose of their mobile number for texting as they are email address or emails. But once merchants get it, if they're on board with the text thing, they do, to your point, seem to just hammer it. And I've unsubscribed from a bunch because I think this is where you're going. It's like, shut up. You're annoying me. Like, stop doing that. 3 or 4 months, that I could take. You know, one every other day, which at least one of those merchants that I subscribe to does, I just want to kick them. But I guess I'm doing the professional experiment to see how long they'll put up with it. Yeah, that's a lot. And it's costing them a lot to do that. A lot.
So what are those rates on average?
You know, I don't know what they pencil out to in bulk, but if you were, you know, if you were tiptoeing into text messaging in the US, you might go with Tatango or Text Request, which are platforms specifically for marketing use of text. Or if you're a geek, you might roll your own with Twilio. But you're looking at like a penny a message, which doesn't sound like much, but you know, you start sending out 30,000 and getting an X percent response rate. It's an expensive hobby.
Yeah. So we can talk about WhatsApp costs right now.
Yeah, which is that's also, where we're going to go.
that's also an issue that we are trying to minimize those costs for our brands. But WhatsApp is usually more expensive than SMS. However, SMS in Europe, I believe, is way more expensive than in the US.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
So that's why I believe WhatsApp is dominating here. That's one of the reasons.
It's because it is substantially lower cost and it gets equal, if not higher, attention, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Interesting.
So speaking about the cost of WhatsApp, many brands that never had experience with WhatsApp, they think it's free. So WhatsApp business app is free, of course. You can just download that in App Store. But it's of course, we don't use that for marketing purposes. We're not sending campaigns from WhatsApp app.
Yeah.
So there's, for many of the audience don't know this probably, but there is a free business app on WhatsApp, which is for like very small businesses. It's limited up to 250 conversations only, actually,
okay,
per month. So that's for small restaurants, for some, I don't know, some just local stores. And then there is WhatsApp Business API, which is now called WhatsApp Business Platform. So that's for huge brands, for enterprises that we are using right now. And that allows you to send basically unlimited amount WhatsApp messages. Wow. You can scale that to 100,000 per day. You can scale that to unlimited amounts.
Is the cost so per you are message? Paying,
no, per conversation.
Okay.
And by conversation, Meta means the conversation that's happening between you and the customer in 24-hour window.
So if you and I go, if a merchant and I go back and forth and back and forth a few times, that's one conversation?
Yeah. If the 24-hour window doesn't pass, when there's absolutely no response, neither from you, not from customer, then this window passes. And once you send the next message or campaign, you have to pay.
So WhatsApp message to someone who's not paying attention costs the same as a WhatsApp message to someone who's really engaged fundamentally.
The rates are the just generalized per country.
Yeah.
So there's no difference if the customer is engaged or not engaged.
Yeah. Okay. So no, by engaged, I mean, if it's by putting a window on it, a time window on it, if there's additional back and forth, which you'd want, it yeah. doesn't cost you more for the additional back and forth within that window, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How interactive is WhatsApp as a channel? It, you know, if I said you abandoned the cart, should I be expecting a human being on the other end if I've got questions about what I left in the cart?
Do you mean the customer?
No, if I'm the customer, I left a widget in the cart. I get a WhatsApp message, Mary Poppins saying you left something in the cart. And I want to say, well, hang on. Yeah, I wanted to know if you had this size or this color or something like that. How often does that message lead to an actual back and forth live interaction with someone on the merchant side, merchant to customer?
Pretty often, actually. So here we come to another point again, which is WhatsApp gives a problem and an opportunity at once. So unlike email and SMS, many people actually do conversations on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And I would say around 20 to 30% of people, they actually respond.
Wow.
And they continue those conversations. So that's also part of my job, is to assign to a brand
yeah.
a trained customer support agent who will yes. be managing those WhatsApp yes. messages or yeah. conversations.
Okay.
And that's a really great practice. There are some brands who prefer just leaving this without customer agent.
Yeah.
That's not a great idea. You yeah. can set up this automated message, which says, in case you have any questions, please send an email to contact that brand's
yeah.
name.
Yeah.
But that's a bad practice, because people, they actually expect to continue conversation on the channel that they started.
Yeah. No, that seems fair. Do you expect, or have you already started, finding a role for AI in the front end of those conversations?
Yeah, we did. So we were testing a lot with GPT. We were training this for WhatsApp and implementing this for a couple of clients in summer. But it actually was more expensive than we thought. So GPT is consuming a lot of tokens, and that's right now more expensive actually than sustaining a customer support agent.
Interesting. Well, and I'm assuming yeah. customer support agent, like a lot of chat channels, customer support agent can handle more than one conversation at a time fundamentally, right?
Yeah, it's pretty easy to handle conversations on WhatsApp. Yeah, we've been playing with GPT. We've been actually implementing this for a huge brand with over 1 million monthly visitors. So that was quite a big deal.
Yeah.
But it was extremely costly. Like OpenAI tokens, they are just expiring so quickly when you're having tens of thousands of conversations every day.
Yes.
And the customer experience is absolutely amazing. Like I'm going to give you an example. For example, the consumer is asking, okay, I have dry skin. It's winter right now. What would you recommend to me?
Yeah.
And the AI understands the question exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They give their recommendation that we train them. and sends the product from the catalog in WhatsApp. So the customer experience is absolutely out of this world.
That's cool. That's scary, but that's cool.
Yeah. And when we were showing this to founders, they were absolutely inspired by this. But in the long term, that's still more costly than actually having even a team of customer support agents, I would say.
Wow. One sec. I got to jot that down. That's a great glimpse into the future. It really is. Like, and we could probably go off and speculate what that future will look like, but we get off topic really fast. Wow. Fascinating. Fascinating. We end up a lot of conversations about AI in email, you know, email groups and other professional groups that I'm involved in. But so much of it is still hand waving. And to hear a concrete example where you found use and the use is valid, but the cost equation didn't pencil out, at least not now, is fascinating, because I have to assume, like most digital things, the cost part of the equation will drop over time. So the viability of that will come back. You know, like you'll probably revive that experiment and keep it in place at some point in the future.
Absolutely. The experiment was very successful. I believe the cost should definitely go down once the computing costs are just going down.
Yeah, I'll try to remember to send you a link. There's a very, very long explanation by Stephen Wolf from about what a GPT, like ChatGPT, is doing, and it gives you some idea why it's so cotton pick and expensive for now. But you know, digital innovation tends to go at an astonishing pace. I'm with you. I think the cost will come down. It's what really intrigues me about the example you gave is the marryover into the richer aspects of the channel. It's not just a text recommendation saying, you know, use lanolin on your dry skin. It's here's the catalog. Go ahead and buy it if you want it. Like, much more seamless experience, at least commercial sense, much more seamless experience all the way through, potentially to the transaction. Like, whoa, you just gave me a good idea what the Amazon app is going to look like in 5 years. Wow.
Yeah, it will be crazy. Yeah.
Tell me a bit. We're going to go off the reservation for a second here. Tell me a bit about Latvia, and you mentioned the differences in the market there to some extent, but give me your experiences in, because I think you've got a base in Berlin as well, right? Your company? Because you mentioned Germany.
No, we have a team. We have a remote team in Berlin, but I'm, yeah.
You're completely Latvia.
Yeah, I'm completely in Latvia, but a lot of our team members are in Berlin, because a lot of our clients are in Berlin.
And a lot of clients there. What are some of the differences you see in the commercial landscape, in marketing, in, I don't know, WhatsApp use between, let's say, Latvia and Germany?
I think the differences are major. First of all, Latvia is a very small country. There's actually 1 million internet users.
Okay.
So there's really not happening a lot of commerce here. Mm-hmm. There's very few brands that we could work with. We have some clients from Latvia, but the market is very small here.
Okay.
In terms of WhatsApp, in terms of marketing, again, I think the size of the market. Again, there's a lot of brands in Germany that are already implementing all different sorts of strategies, both WhatsApp and AI. In Latvia, there's really not that many brands.
That many. Okay. And yet you stay.
Yeah.
It's home.
Yeah, I just love Latvia. So, yeah.
That's cool. And I mean, I admire the, let's call it what it is, international conglomerate that you and your team have created, right? Who says you can't figure out how to make something work in another country? You obviously have.
Yeah, right now everything is remotely anyways. So I don't actually see the advantages of moving somewhere. Well, probably meeting clients in person.
Sure.
Through some events or conferences, I guess that's a major advantage.
Yeah.
But besides that, I don't see any actual advantages. Yeah. Probably I'm wrong.
I don't think you're wrong, particularly post-pandemic, right? Like, thank you, right? World jumped 10 years forward and a lot of habits have changed that I'm not sure are ever going to shift back to their previous position. I mean, I do the same thing in more local sense. You know, I live in a remote part of the U.S. because I like it here. And there's a drag factor of, I'm not going to meet clients here. They're not going to be here. It's more of a pain to travel to things, but tough bananas. I like it here. Right? I'll make it work from here. And Texans almost speak the same language I do. So sometimes that works pretty well. So that was a throwaway joke about Texans, by the way.
Do you enjoy working remotely?
I've worked remotely for about as many years as you've been alive. So yeah, I do. But I had a team. I ran a startup in music technology of all things in 2005-06 that was fully remote. We had people in Vermont, Washington, Texas, California, multiple parts of California. And about a third of the people on that team that was productive, or sorry, about a third of them, it really didn't work. There was one of the people on the team that thought she was going to love it and went bananas, went nuts. Within a couple of weeks, she was East Coast. She would pounce on us. We used Skype as a channel back then for that company. She would pounce on people the minute they showed up, you know, online on Skype, because she was really eager for social contact. We eventually rented a desk in an office in her town so she could go work around humans, because for her, that office interaction, that live interaction, not being in her life just didn't suit her, didn't make her happy. And I think there are people for whom that's still true. You work completely remotely yourself, or do you go physically where your team is?
Yeah. Previously, I've been working from co-working spaces, but I actually enjoy working remotely way more.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Do you think generationally that's going to be normal?
I think, that's definitely a massive trend, but I think it will be remote work with some occasional meetups between members.
Yeah. Yeah. The bonding, relationship, familiarization, trust. To me, that's the more important part of the face-to-face. It's not necessarily, let's go there so we can sit at our laptops and do the same thing we would do remotely, you know, break bread, oyster beer, whatever it is you do with people there to actually get to know them. That's a big change. I mean, I'm looking at it the other side, having spent a lot of years working when that was very unusual. I had years where trying to work remotely was extremely, extremely hard. Video conferencing, I got to tell you this, I'm curious your reaction to it, but my lens on it is that we actually lucked out massively on the timing of the COVID pandemic. If it had happened even 5 years earlier, the network infrastructure and application infrastructure really wasn't there. You could, in theory, video conference in 2015. In practice, almost no one would do it, knew how to do it, and a video conference was painful. It was 15 minutes of tech support and 10 minutes of conversation. Seriously, it was that awful.
Do you mean by Skype?
Skype had gotten decent penetration, and I was using Skype way back when it was a peer-to-peer app. But no one had a camera. Almost no one had a camera. Even though it supported that, relatively early on, people wouldn't have it or wouldn't have it plugged in, or like it just wasn't the kind of easy thing. You and I just hopped on this Zoom conversation. You're in Latvia, I'm in the US. We just hopped on this Zoom conversation, and as normal as meeting in the street and shaking hands, right?
Right. You still want to see the person. Otherwise, it's just like the same as just talking via phones. Yeah.
Which I know nobody does anymore. But yeah. So the timing where Zoom in particular as a company benefited from it, but the timing where broadband was ubiquitous enough, smartphones were advanced enough, internet infrastructure in a lot of countries was advanced enough to go, I guess we should work remotely, and look, we can far better than we thought. If we'd tried that experiment 5 years earlier, I think it would have been considerably more painful. And there's a whole generation, you know, your generation, much more digital native. You're like, oh, okay, fine. I've got to, you know, communicate and work on a device. That's fine. I can do that. We lucked out in a funny sense, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting take. So basically you're saying that these solutions to remote meetings, so the Zoom and everything, just evolved when the demand was there.
They had evolved. I had gone through probably 4 or 5 different video conferencing solutions in the 4 or 5 years prior to the pandemic, trying to find the one that would cost me the least friction in working with people. Doing 15 minutes of helping someone figure out how to install the app, run the app, make it talk to their camera, would blow the productivity of a remote meeting. And I had adopted Zoom, maybe by coincidence. I'm an early adopter, right? I'd adopted Zoom maybe a year before the pandemic. It was relatively new. It was relatively young. The guy who founded Zoom was ex-Cisco, I believe. Cisco had acquired one of the previous predominant video conferencing platforms that was not nearly as easy. And he said, wait a minute, I think I can make this whole video conferencing thing easier, better, more performative, less lag, all of that stuff. And Zoom was a couple years old when the pandemic hit. It was fairly new. So yeah, the platforms had evolved almost just in time for our need for them. So when I say we got lucky, I mean, we really kind of got lucky. If it had happened in 2010, it'd have been a meltdown. No flipping way. So there you go. Did the pandemic make for a boost in what people did with WhatsApp specifically?
Actually, WhatsApp been there for a while right now. Okay. So before pandemic, it was also very popular. But I believe, yeah, if we should take a look at statistics probably, but I believe that, yeah, WhatsApp users grew very rapidly during the pandemic.
Yeah, I would not be surprised. I mean, we had to find ways to connect, communicate, arrange things, all of that stuff. And you know, why not? It you certainly paint a compelling picture of how WhatsApp as a channel is likely to evolve and become even more important in people's lives. That's really a darn interesting insight. Where do you Go ahead.
Yeah, what you just described about the communication apps such as Zoom and Skype and everything, pretty same thing is for WhatsApp in terms of commerce. So all the commerce in WhatsApp, and I'm talking about WhatsApp payments, catalogs, everything evolved really during the pandemic, which is 2020, 2021. And before that, if I was doing WhatsApp marketing, there was really no ways to do that before pandemic. It was just too buggy. There was no real commerce happening. So yeah, it's quite new.
Quite new, yeah. I'm curious your reaction to something else, since normally we're supposed to talk about email at least a little bit. I don't see email going away, but the technical mechanisms required to do things like catalogs and transactions simply aren't there in in the set of protocols that make email work. It's going to happen. And I suspect as a result that even more, I suspect it's the other channels are going to find new uses, and email will sort of continue to do what it's done for a decade already. What do you think?
Absolutely. I'm a big fan and advocate of email marketing. And I absolutely think that it's not going anywhere. And I know why many people are saying that it's going somewhere, because that's a great hook for marketing. And many people in the chatbot space, and also in MySpace and WhatsApp marketing, they're saying that email is that. They've been saying this for over like 5 or 10 years already. But we find perfect collaboration of email and WhatsApp, so to say. So we're also partnering with email agencies, and you just can't provide that much value through WhatsApp as you could through email. So they work hand in hand. I would say they're definitely meant to work together.
Okay, cool. Last question. We should probably wrap up. Where do you want to take ChatSmart as a business?
I have huge plans for this, but right now we're working as an agency with brands, so I would like to evolve this further. But later, I see myself transitioning into the software industry, and I know particularly that will be also in WhatsApp. I see this as a massive opportunity right now. So yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. You understand the space, and you probably have a keen appreciation of what is missing in the space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Renard, it's been an exceptionally fun conversation. I don't know if you'd appreciate how exciting the insights you've shared are, because the perspective and the difference in the market you're working in, like, you're a few years ahead of us, honestly.
Do you mean the Europe, or?
I'll say this as careful as I can. For a lot of quirky historical reasons, and this tends to happen over and over, the U.S. is a regulation last market. Whether it's electricity or radio or digital platforms or whatever, we'll tend to get this sort of explosion of many solutions. And they'll kind of jockey around for position. And the winner's not always the best. They just happen to have won. The fact that texting and like Apple messages and Android messages is sort of the de facto standard chat channel in the US, it's like, it's a bit accidental, but it is. Like my friends and colleagues and family will do most of their stuff via texting and Apple Messages closed ecosystem, right? So I've never had the kind of rich experience you described of getting a catalog and transacting on a digital channel aside from the Amazon app that I mentioned. I do think it'll evolve in this market, but on that particular experience, because WhatsApp as a channel in Europe, or WeChat, which you mentioned in China, got traction, became a habit for those markets earlier, differently. The experience is ahead.
Which is cool. I would say the experience is ahead in China, specifically, not in Europe yet. Europe hasn't yet adopted WhatsApp in its full capacity, not even close to that. Okay. It's still relatively new.
Okay.
But China is definitely ahead of us all in terms of customer experience, I believe.
Well, it helps when you have someone telling you that's what you have to use. Like, get ahead when that happens.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
It's off. You know what? I don't know how I'll make it happen, but getting a guest on this and having a conversation, guest from China, and having a conversation about WeChat would be pretty darn interesting. I don't know how to but wouldn't that be a guess?
That would be really interesting.
That's cool. Well, thank you so much for making the time to connect. What time is it where you are, by the way?
For me, it's 9 p.m. right now. It's late evening.
You sat up late to talk with me. I appreciate it. Where does someone find you if they listen to this and say, oh, we really need to talk to ChatSmart? Where's the best place for them to reach you?
Yeah, I'm available on LinkedIn, but they can reach me on chatsmart.org.
Chatsmart.org. So that's my bad. Renard Skuchel, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you for having me.
We're out.